I love this text. It's just one of my favorites. It's Moses' encounter with God. And like I said, you don't really need to say a lot about Moses because we know that Moses was the lawgiver. We also know that when Moses died, that Joshua was raised up and he actually led the people into the promised land. Joshua meaning a prototype of Christ. Here's one of the things with Moses, which has often confused me. I know that Moses loved God and he made one mistake. And that mistake caused him to go into the promised land. But Moses represents the law. And the law cannot get anyone justified to get into heaven. And so Moses was at least in God's grace. Moses was at least able to look into the promised land, but was not able to go. I think within this text, in the broad narrative of theology, I think Moses representing the law also foreshadowed a time when Jesus Christ would come, Joshua being raised up, taking the people into the promised land, and Moses dying, the law. When you come to the New Testament, you find that theology all over the place. Law and works cannot get you into heaven. It is only by the blood and sacrifice of Jesus Christ in which we are able to enter into the presence of the Most Holy. So, that kind of the background. Let's look at what we learn in this text. First of all, God is holy. That is absolutely true. You'll notice on you don't have an outline because the copier messed up today, but we're going from his transcendence to his immanence. That is, from God being so far removed to being personal with us. And that's exactly the way it was in the Old Testament, the way it is in the New Testament, in the person of the Holy Spirit. But let's look, first of all, at verses 1 through 4. Now, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Now, the Israelites had been in bondage for 400 years, at least over 400 years, in bondage. And so now God is getting ready to call Moses to a very particular task, a very important task, a very sacred task, part of a divine plan of God. And what is often overlooked is the life of Moses. We come to this text and we just kind of skip through it. But when we look at the life of Moses, we realize that Moses was 40 years as a prince in Pharaoh's household. He had everything. He had prestige. He had power. Many of you know the story where he was pulled out of the river and taken into to the Pharaoh's house and grew up as the prince of Egypt. And then Moses started realizing God's call on his life. Saw some things happening to the Hebrews, to the Israelites, and he didn't like it, and he got himself into trouble. And then the next 40 years, Moses spent his life as a shepherd. That is, he would lead the people of Israel. You could break Moses' life into three sections, each of 40 years, if you want to boil it down to for simplicity. So Moses now goes from this position of prestige and honor and power to humility and humbleness. But God wasn't done with Moses yet. He also spent the next 40 years in the wilderness. I can't help but think, in my own understanding of God and how he works in our lives, and that's why I think it's so personal for us. You notice where God took Moses: position of power, then humbleness, then brokenness, completely dependent upon God. And actually, brothers and sisters, that's what God is trying to do in our lives. He's trying to strip our lives of everything that we count on and live our lives in a state of dependency and trust on him. Because that's where the Christian life should be lived. It shouldn't be lived on, well, I have enough money here, I have enough stuff here, I don't really need God at this point. And many times that's what keeps people from coming to Jesus Christ by way of faith, is they've got everything that they need. But God was in the process of stripping Moses of everything so that he would be more dependent on him. And God was with Moses. There's no doubt about that. God helped Moses through these tough times. He fed them manna when they were in the wilderness. The people rebelled against Moses a few times. And that's where he got into trouble, because he struck the rock and then God said you shouldn't have done that. And then Moses got into trouble. But overall, if you look at the overall picture of Moses, what God was trying to do with Moses was to take him from this point to this point, and the only way he could do that was to bring him to a wilderness of brokenness. So when we talk about the burning bush and that God is holy, we are talking here about God doing a work in Moses' life, and I think what he wants to do in our lives. So God eventually speaks to Moses, Mount Horeb, or Mount Sinai, we refer to it. You think about, this is where God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses. Ten simple commandments. The first five dealing with our relationship with God, and the next five dealing with our relationship with one another. This comes over into the New Testament as well. And those simple Ten Commandments, we cannot live. Therefore, this is why Christ came. He died on the cross to pay for the sins. Not just for those ten, but for all sins. And so he comes to the mountain, and notice what it says in verse 2. And an angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flame of a fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Anytime you see fire in the Old Testament, it is always symbolic of the presence of God. So when Moses, and I believe the angel of the Lord was God himself out of the midst of that bush getting ready to speak to Moses. So here you have Moses immediately knew something was going on because common sense says if you look at a bush and there's flames in it, that bush is going to burn and it's going to crumble. Well, the bush was not crumbling, so Moses knew something was going on. He knew that something special was getting ready to happen. And notice what he says. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. Typical men. They want to know what's going on and why it didn't burn, but it got his attention. And listen, God was trying to get Moses' attention. And it worked. Notice what he said. When the Lord saw, verse 4, when the Lord saw, he turned aside. God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses, and he said, here I am. God ever get your attention? God ever give you a wake-up call? My wake-up call was on a Tuesday years ago, 1988. And that was my calling to ministry through a dream. And many of you know I'm not charismatic, but there's no way you can get around this and all the events that led up to it. God was in the process, and I looked back at my life, and God was in the process of taking away so that he could get me where he needed me to be. That night I dreamed that I had died, and this was predicated on already a young man dying earlier and under my command, and in that dream, this figure stood over me and didn't say a word, didn't have a face, but I could hear him. He didn't say, you know, physical words, but I could hear him in my mind. And he said, it's the third day, it's time to get up. And he pointed to the right. So I got up and I pointed to the right. Many of you know the story. I'm just repeating what I've already told you many times. Pointed to the right, and there were people stretched out like this with roots growing out of their back into the ground. And their faces were horrific. I've never seen faces like that. Still, I can remember some of the images from that moment. Then I immediately reached behind my back. And I tried to feel for my roots. And all I could feel was a stump. And I looked at this being and I said, where's my roots? And he said, Jesus, cut your roots. Go preach the gospel. I woke up screaming. Audrey said, what is wrong? And I said, I've got to surrender to the ministry. That next Sunday, I went forward in my church there in Germany, walked the aisle, told my pastor, I've got to go into the ministry, and I surrendered to the ministry. Moses is having a moment with God here. Have you ever had those moments when God comes face to face with you in your life? My response, or our response, should be, here I am. Many people will hear and have an encounter with God and walk away with it and regret it for the rest of their lives sometimes. Moses said, here am I. He's listening. Okay, God. All right. You've got my attention. Now let's go to the place, verses 5 and 6. Then he said, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place you are standing is holy ground." So here you have Moses at the burning bush. He takes his sandals off. He knows now that the bush is God. Not that the bush is God, but God is in the midst of that bush. He knows that he's in the presence of God. And so God requests that he takes the sandals off his feet, which was a sign of worship then. So when Moses took off his sandals, he was preparing to worship God. Any time that we come into the presence of God, we are worshiping God, and it does not have to be on Sunday morning. God can speak to us in the middle of the night, laying on our bed. How many of you have had that happen to you? There's been times in my life when I've woke up and I realized God was speaking to me. You are in the presence of God. You begin to worship then. Worship is not something that is done on Sunday morning. Sunday morning is a worship time and can be a worship time when you encounter God. But let me say this. Any time that you encounter God, it is a moment and an opportunity to worship him. And to be in his presence. Wow. Wouldn't you have liked to have been Moses at this moment? In the presence of God, out of a bush that is burning but will not burn to the ground. And he knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was God standing in front of him. And God was getting ready to speak to him. Wonderful things. But Moses would have missed it if he had not been willing to listen to God. He could have walked away, but he didn't. He stood there and he did exactly what God told him to do. When I got that call to ministry, I didn't say, "Gee, I think I'm going to wait on this and just kind of think about it for a couple of months." No, I immediately at that point told my wife, "Sunday morning, I'm going forward and I'm following God into the ministry." I had 12 years in the Army. I had a great career going. It was not my design to go into ministry, but God had called me and it was clear and I left. Some of you may have a call on your life right now that you've just been putting off. Please don't do that. If it's God, it will be revealed to you. And my encouragement to you as your pastor would be to follow God's call for your life, to follow him. I don't know if you've ever been to Moody Church. Any of you ever been to Moody Church? Moody Church is beautiful. You can see it up there. Jesus Christ, same yesterday, today, and forever. I was there a while back, now it's been 7-8 years ago, and we went to hear Alistair Begg speak. And when we were sitting way in the upper deck, the nosebleed section. But it was so majestic. It was so wonderful. Voices lifted to God. You could sense God's presence. But if you go back into Moody Church when it's empty, it's not a worshipful experience. Here's the thing. It's wherever the presence of God and his people are, then you can experience worship with God. This is just a building. Many of you are not in here during the week. Sometimes I walk down here. This is one of the loneliest places to be during the week. There's nobody here. I know God's with me because he lives in me, but it's not a worshipful setting. But when we're here on Sunday morning, it is a time of worship and praise and glory for Christ. Please don't be confused. Sunday morning is a time set aside to worship God, but please don't miss the opportunities to worship God during the week. In those moments when God speaks to you and I think you need to respond to those times. Yeah, Moody Church is beautiful and you know they have those wonderful pipe organs, but it's really where God's people are gathered singing his praises, coming into his presence. And that can happen anywhere. That can happen outside. It can happen with two or three people just praying. But Moses there is filled with the presence of God at this moment. Now notice what he says. And he said, "I am the God." This is God speaking directly to Moses, verse 6. And he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Now look at what Moses did. Moses hid his face from God, for he was afraid to look at God. Now, I want you to see what's taking place here. We've got this holy God that is so awesome and removed. And Moses proves it here. But what's getting ready to happen in the next few verses is God's beginning to move down. He's beginning to come in contact with his people. But at this moment, Moses is afraid to look at God. Theologically, in the Old Testament, to look at God was to die. You could not look upon God. But Moses knew that he was in the presence of God, knew that God was talking to him. And yet he was afraid to look at him because he had such reverence for God. Listen, we should have a reverential fear for God. Not in a sense of this, but in a sense of respect and awe and wonder. God has done so much for us. You know that? He's done so much for us and given us so much. He is worthy, and I love that, worthy of worship, worthy of honor, worthy of praise. That's the way it should be every day in our lives. And so here Moses has an encounter with God that he now cannot even look upon God. He is covering his face from God. This God who is so holy, yet knows our troubles. This God that is so transcendent that Moses couldn't even look upon, comes down now to see us in our troubles and hardships and trials. And by the way, that's the norm, not the exception, for the Christian life. Because the moment that you trust in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, you're asking for trouble. Because this world is not friendly to us. But notice what he says. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. The Greek word there, seen, means to make a view and to make a judgment based on perception. So here God is seen as having eyes, and the affliction is the hardship of the Israelites. That is the 400 years of bondage. We oftentimes, I guess in our lives, don't we? We often say, does God even see what's going on? When you have hardships and trials in your life and you think, where's God? He doesn't see. He doesn't care. He doesn't respond. He doesn't know what's going on. It's almost as if God got up from MeTV and he went to the refrigerator to get something to eat and he hadn't come back. We forget something. God sees everything in our lives. He knows exactly where we are. For those of you that think God doesn't have time to take care of you, God has been taking care of this world for thousands of years. And even in the midst of all of this, these years of God being in control and moving world events to the conclusion of the return of Jesus Christ, God has a plan for you. You. Your individual life, God has a plan for. And in the midst of all of this, what seems to us confusion, God is working out a plan. Just as he did with Moses, he worked out the plan to completion. And he had a perfect plan for Moses. Moses was willing to follow him. We have a perfect plan that God has given us. We have to be willing to follow him. There's parallels there. To follow the way God leads. And that's what Moses was doing. But let me remind us, too, that God sees everything that happens in our lives. There's never a time when you can truly say, God didn't see that. There's no way God could have saw that. He did. Because he's God. And if God can't see it, then he ceases to be God. NASA says we have thousands of satellites floating around. And by the way, your cell phones are a benefit of that satellite. And so are your GPSs, all these thousands of satellites, and the satellites able to see exactly your location. It's kind of funny. We can attribute to satellites that are in the sky guiding individual GPSs, but we can't see God, who is much higher than the satellites, in guiding individual lives. And we have this GPS that guides us around. But you know what? GPSs don't always work. If it's extremely cloudy, have you ever had that happen? One day I got in my car, I set the GPS, and it said no signal. And I'm like, oops. I got to sit here till the satellite sees this GPS and knows the route I'm going before I can move. God's not like that. God always sees. Doesn't matter what's going on. No matter how dark it is in your life, no matter where you are spiritually, and I'm talking about if it's pitch black right now in your life, God sees that. He sees right where you are. He knows where you are. God never loses you. GPS, God's perceptive system. He knows exactly where you are. Even if you can't see God and you don't even think he's there. God is able to see in the darkest moments of your life. Even though you may be struggling right now, God sees you. Let me just encourage you to rest in that for a minute. Whatever it is in your life right now, just rest. Trust God. He tells Moses, I have seen the affliction of my people. I have seen it with my eyes. Just rest. That's the hardest thing to do when you're in struggle, isn't it? Because a quick thing to do is say, God doesn't care and I got to take action. Just rest. Just trust. But not only that, but God hears. I want you to look. He's using physical language so that we can understand. God sees, God hears. Listen to what he says. And have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. Years ago, this is Army Day, I guess. Years ago, this was my office. I was a 31 Charlie, radio teletype operator. And I would sit in the back of this rat rig for 12 hours at a time. This, you can maybe see it here. This right here would roll out and the typewriter would turn this way so I could type. And by the way, this was the internet before the internet. Because we were sending instant messages with this machine right here. Once I would type it up on this, I would make a tape of it and I would feed it through this electronically over to the modem, and the modem would send it on to where it was going to, and it would be encrypted by the other side. Hey, wait a minute, that's the internet. We were doing the internet in the 70s before the internet even came out. A lot of the stuff that we do in civilian life really starts with the military and then bleeds over. And one night when I was in Hawaii, that was a tough duty station. That was tough. I actually re-enlisted for Hawaii, and re-enlisted right after Audrey and I got married, and we spent the first 3 years in Hawaii. One night we were out in the field, and I was a sergeant. I was in charge, and I said, you know what? I haven't been in a rat rig, actually sat in there at that time, because when you get to be a sergeant, you kind of oversee the rat rigs. But I told the operator, I said, let me take the midnight shift. So he goes, wow, thanks, Sergeant Frazier. Bam, he was gone. But so I sat in there, and I played around with the doublet antenna, just kind of stretched it, and those pineapples looked really good. But I stretched it, and I said, I'm going to see how far I can skip this. I should skip it right off the ocean. Okay, the first place that I skipped to, I tuned in the radio, I bounced it. You're listening to BBC, all the way to England. Then I hit one in Germany, one in Russia. Was a rare night. I was communicating. I could listen. And when you hear, we see you, comrade. This little communication device was able to communicate. And we would send stuff back and forth. We'd switch over the equipment at midnight in case the enemy would listen. Sometimes ships off into the ocean that were not friendly to us would sometimes be able to get our communication. So we had to shift it over at midnight with the KWK-7, and that means change all the wires around. And if the other person on the other side didn't change their wire around, guess what? You didn't get the message through. Then I had to go on a landline. And I said, hey, fix your cryptic box. You're obviously on the wrong signal. And that's dangerous in itself to use a landline because it's much easier to be picked up by the enemy. It worked. Most of the time we went to the field, I ran 95% successful communication. There was always 5% you couldn't communicate. And let me say this. Anytime that you cry to God, he hears it. There's never a moment where it's garbled. There is never a moment when God doesn't hear it. There is never a moment when God says, I never heard that word before. No, there is never a moment in your life when God has abandoned you. There's never a moment in your life when you are alone. There is never a moment in your life when God has said, I have nothing more to do with you. No, and there's never a moment when you cry out, even the smallest cry, in the darkest place, goes to the very ears of God. I know a lot of times we think God can't possibly see and God can't possibly hear, but we're talking here about the Old Testament when God was so transcendent. But now notice what he's doing with Moses. He's coming down and he's saying, I know my people. I hear their voice. I see their lives. I know what's going on. I love you and I'm getting ready to take action. Trust me. And by the way, God does have limits on his tolerance. And when the tolerance time is up and it's time for God to take vengeance and to take action, he will. The good news here is that he will deliver us. We have a holy God who knows our trouble and who will deliver us. I believe that with every fiber of my being. He said, well, there's times I wasn't delivered. Maybe God used that time to grow you and to challenge you. I have every confidence that no matter what you're going through today, no matter what your situation, God will deliver you. But you have to listen and you have to watch what God is doing. Moses saw, oh, better look at this. This is important. Got his attention. He said, I'm willing to do what you want me to do. I'm going to follow you. And then God moves down. You see, God moves down. He moved down. Look, verse 8a. And he says it, I have come down to deliver them out of the hands of the Egyptians. I have come down. I got stuck on that idiom of divine intervention. I have come down. I got stuck on that this week, going back over this wonderful text. And I started thinking, wait a minute. Yeah, God came down in the New Testament. You know that? There was God, and he brought forth Christ. What does the scripture say? And Christ left heaven and came down to earth. He was born of a virgin, born like we are. Why did God do that? Because he saw our struggles and our trials and our sin, and we were caught in the mud and the mire of life. God saw that, and he just responded. He came right down. He said, I have a plan, and I'm going to redeem man. They can't do it by law that Moses gave, which is holy. And in Deuteronomy, when he up on a mountain, he came down, he saw them worshiping, he threw them, broke the tablets, and that's why God gave Deuteronomy, second law, Deuteronomy, second law in the Hebrew. And so he said, you can't live by 10 simple commandments. You need to be delivered. So God saw us in our struggle. And guess what he did in the New Testament? God came down in the person of Jesus Christ. What happened next? God sent him to the cross. And you know what? Every one of those laws that God wrote, that God spoke, that God thinks, Christ fulfilled. He lived them perfectly. And you know why he lived imperfectly? Because we can't. And so Jesus Christ then, when God saw the spiritual situation of not only the nation of Israel, but of humanity, he knew he had to take action, and he sent Christ down to this earth to live among us. We beheld his glory, glory of the only begotten of the Father. And by the way, we rejected him initially. And he goes to the cross, lives it perfectly, so that he can then restore our relationship with God. Wow. And when Christ came, he gave us victory over sin, over death, By the way, if you're a child of God and you die, you go right into the presence of Christ. Wow. Awesome. He not only heard, and he wasn't indifferent to the nation of Israel. He didn't say, well, you know, they struggled, but it's their own fault. Just let them linger a while longer. No, God said, okay, now's the time for me to move and to take action. And by the way, that's the way it works in our lives too. Have you ever tried to force God to do something before time? Oh, yeah. I'm as guilty as the next person. I don't mind saying that. God, you need to hurry up. You see the situation. Hey, come on now. Come on, let's move. Let's do something. No, it's usually in God's time, and it's usually something you hadn't even thought of, right? How did that one come about? Well, I can tell you how it came about. God put it all together to deliver you, and he will. But not only that, God protects, or God provides. Notice he says, I will bring them up to the land flowing with milk and honey. And here you see God moving them into that land. And not mentioned in this text is Joshua, who will actually take them into the promised land. The Hittites probably migrated from the north, the Amorites from northern Mesopotamia, the Perizzites were nomads. They traveled all over the place. The Hivites probably came from North Palestine, and the Jebusites were the hill country near Jerusalem. And so here you have this dynamic in play, and he says, I'm going to take them to this land. They've been in a rough spot, but I'm going to promise to take them to the promised land. Isn't that life? Really, think for a minute. We go through hardships and trials in this life, and then the payoff is we see Jesus face to face. Be thankful for the good times. Be thankful for the joyful times. That's not always the case. The problem is, I think we have a lot of Christians today that want all the good times and none of the bad times. But the bad times, God is transforming us into the image of Christ. Exactly what he did with Moses. Took him away from his position and prestige and power and humbled him and then broke him so that he could become more like God and in his face and to see him with all of his glory, which he did. Let me give you a couple of verses before we close. Psalm 34:19, the righteous person may have many troubles. This is Old Testament. But the Lord delivers him from them all. Whatever you're going through today, God will deliver you. It will be in his time, and it will complete what it's supposed to complete in your life. In the life of the Israelites, it was to turn their minds towards God. Unfortunately, they had to learn that many, many times. In our lives, it will complete what it's supposed to complete. Remember this, God is never late, God is never early, God is always on time. Let me give you another verse. I love this next verse. This is awesome. Oh gosh, I love this. Actually, when I go into times of trouble, this is a verse I go to a lot. Two of them, Psalm 91:1-4. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High will find rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Wow. That means whenever I've got stuff going on in my life, I just go to the mountain of God. Moses went to the mountain of God. You go to the mountain of God, and you just remember to find your rest in the shadow of the Almighty. Notice what he says. He will cover you with his feathers. He will shelter you with his wings. Going to close, but I want to say this. We worship a holy God. Remember that. He is holy. He is worthy of our praise, our honor, our adoration, our love. But God also sees your troubles. He knows your trials. He hears your cries. And at the right time, at the right time and the right place, God will deliver you. You believe that this morning? Hold on to that. Cling to that.